Inside Florida Politics, powered by Gannett Florida. Hello, I'm Sarasota Herald Tribune political editor Zach Anderson, and I'm joined as always by Gannett Capital Bureau reporter John Kennedy. Hey, John.
Hello, Zach.
Well, we're back from the Thanksgiving break with plenty of Florida political news to discuss. But first, I wanted to note that since our last podcast, Gatehouse joined forces with Gannett to create a mega newspaper company under the Gannett name, which is why you might notice some changes to my intro. John and I are now Gannett employees. Not that it really changes anything. We'll still be bringing you the same fresh takes on the latest Florida political news. Which brings me to this week's lineup, which includes a roundup of how Florida lawmakers are reacting to a new phase in the impeachment inquiry, a look at how Republicans and Democrats are banding together in Florida to try and kill a proposed ballot measure, and my interview with Florida Senate President Bill Galvano. But first, you all know what that music means, folks. It's time for our pick a number segment. John, I know you're still recovering from too much turkey, but did you find the time to muster up a number for us this week?
Oh, absolutely. I've got a robust, still fully stuffed post-Thanksgiving number today. It's 200 million.
100 million coming out strong after the break here. All right. Well, I'm going to slide in under that with a 99.3. Remember those numbers, folks. Write them down. We'll tell you what they mean for Florida politics at the end of the show. It's 200 million for John Kennedy and 99.3 for me. Well, Thanksgiving is over. The Christmas lights are going up, and nothing says the holidays like an impeachment inquiry. Congress moved to a new phase of impeachment Wednesday, with the inquiry shifting from the Intelligence Committee to the Judiciary Committee, where constitutional law experts called by Democrats and Republicans spent the day talking about the legal and historical underpinnings of the impeachment process and how this latest case fits in. There are a number of Florida lawmakers on the Judiciary Committee, including Republicans Matt Gaetz and Greg Stube and Democrats Val Demings and Ted Deutsch. At this point, the partisan battle lines are pretty well defined in the House. Democrats said there is strong evidence that Trump abused his power and conditioned nearly $400 million in military aid to Ukraine on an investigation of political rival Joe Biden and his son. Here's Deutsch's comments during the hearing.
Remember, and I ask all of my colleagues to remember, the Constitution grants the president his power through the American people. The president's source of power is a democratic election. It is the American people, the voters, who trusted him to look out for them. We trusted him to look out for the country. But instead, President Trump looked out for himself and helping himself get reelected. He abused the power that we trusted him with for personal and political gain. The founders worried about just this type of abuse of power, and they provided one way for Congress to respond, and that's the power of impeachment.
So Deutsch talking about how Trump abused his power. Republicans defended the president and took aim at the impeachment process, saying it is rushed and one-sided. Here's how Stube views impeachment.
No collusion, no obstruction, no quid pro quo, no evidence of bribery, except opinion, no evidence of treason, no evidence of high crime or misdemeanors. We have a bunch of opinions from partisan Democrats who have stated from day one that they want to impeach the president, and not on this theory, but on multiple other different theories.
Meanwhile, Governor Ron DeSantis weighed in during a press gaggle this week.
And just talking to people is, I think the public generally views it as typical Washington stuff. Obviously, the people that love the president think it's bad. People that hate him think it's good that they're doing it. But I think the average person in between is just kind of like, you know, typical.
So DeSantis calls it typical Washington stuff, impeaching the president of the United States. John, there's some new Florida polling out on this, too. What does it say?
Yeah, well, you know, support for the impeachment inquiry is polling slightly ahead of those who say it shouldn't be underway. The Real Clear Politics poll trackers show almost 4% more Americans support the congressional review, but it's hard to say, you know, really if it has so far changed many people's minds in what's unfolded so far. Democrats are locked in favor of impeachment, Republicans opposed, and a narrow slice of independents favor the impeachment inquiry, and that helps provide the almost 4% edge. But you know, whether it's changing people's view of President Trump, a poll suggests it's not. A new St. Leo University poll that looks at Trump's favorable, unfavorable rating shows that his popularity or, you know, lack of is not changing much either nationally or in Florida. The president had a 55% disapproval rating in April, both in Florida and the nation. Now, in the midst of the impeachment inquiry, that number is still 55% nationwide. But in Florida, he's improved slightly. He's only got 51% of Floridians disapproving of his performance in the White House. His approval numbers, by contrast, they're hovering in the low 40%, but in Florida, they've ticked up a little bit to 45% in this latest St. Leo survey. Now, you know, are Floridians forgiving people? I don't know, but, you know, these differences may be a margin of error changes in the polls, but you got to wonder, though, you know, when you're hearing this, that, you know, have people become numb to the outrages that you're hearing aired in the impeachment? Are people now so beaten down by the constant barrage of actions by Trump that, you know, impeachment is just another version of the Access Hollywood tape or his attacks on John McCain? I don't know. What do you think, Zach?
Well, I think what we see in those poll numbers is that, you know, while independents might support impeachment by a small margin, and that means that the majority of the country might support impeachment by a small margin, you haven't seen Republicans budge at all. And when you have the Senate, the U.S. Senate controlled by Republicans, you know, it doesn't look like this is going anywhere in the Senate. As long as Republicans continue to view this as just a entirely partisan exercise meant to undercut the president, he's not going to be impeached as long as you see poll numbers like this, because the base of the Republican Party doesn't want to see him impeached. The Republican lawmakers are not going to go against the base, and so, you know, I think that the preordained outcome here, which is what pretty much everybody is saying, is that the House is going to impeach him and the Senate is going to acquit him. And I think these poll numbers just reinforce that.
Yeah. You know, another thing is that these disapproval numbers are stunning. You know, the idea that the incumbent president is in the 50% disapproval rating. You know, you look back, Florida Senator Rick Scott, while governor, had some pretty atrocious disapproval ratings, but his worst numbers were usually in the mid 40s. You know, Scott looks like he has the approval ratings of Mother Teresa compared to the president.
And it is really interesting if you look at like Scott and DeSantis and Rubio. Now their approval ratings are all significantly better than Trump in Florida. But you know, Trump's approval rating here in Florida is better than and in some other swing states. So it's hard to say at this point, though. You know, I mean, I think that Trump's approval rating was pretty low going into the 2016 election in Florida, and he was able to win in part because people also didn't like Hillary Clinton that much. And so part of it is how bad you make your opponent look and how you look in comparison.
That's true. Yeah, and yet, not, you know,
not great numbers.
No. And yet, just like in 16, here we are. Trump is still beating most of the Democrats that are running to defeat him, according to these same surveys.
Yeah. And the Democratic nomination process is still very, very confused. I mean, it's not clear at all who the party is nominating. So, who really is the front runner? Biden still continues to sort of be a weak front runner, but you see, Buttigieg, and you see Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, and it's still very muddled. So, it's really hard to say until you have a clearer picture of who the Democratic nominee is, and see kind of how they match up, whether Trump's low approval ratings are really going to be a significant drag on him if the Democrats nominate somebody who themselves has some issues in appealing to a broad base of voters, and it could be a pretty tight race for sure. Well, moving on, while much of the country focuses on impeachment, there are still plenty of other political developments, including here in Florida, where a ballot measure that could be a game changer for state politics went before the Florida Supreme Court this week. John, this proposal to open up Florida's primary elections to all voters did something unusual. It united Republicans and Democrats in opposition. You were at the hearing. Tell us what happened.
Yeah, this proposed all voters vote constitutional amendment, which was reviewed by the state Supreme Court. You know, it turned into sort of a kumbaya moment for the state Democratic and Republican parties, because both sides hate it. And the idea of opening Florida primaries for governor, the legislature, and cabinet to all voters. In other words, you wouldn't have to be a registered Republican to vote in the Republican primary, for example. And part of the motivation behind it is that it would bring 3.7 million no-party affiliated voters into these contests. That's 28% of registered voters in Florida who now have to wait and see who they get to vote on in the November general election, you know, as a result of the current closed primaries. The way this would work is that after the primary, where all candidates would appear on the ballot, the two top vote-getters, regardless of party, would advance to the November election. Four states have this top two kind of system, the biggest being California now. The measure has collected all the signatures that it needs to get on the ballot, and it's been financed by Mike Fernandez, a Miami healthcare multimillionaire who has put more than $6.2 million of his own money into raising signatures for it. Now, Fernandez has been a big Republican donor, but he had a falling out with the party over, well, President Trump and the vilifying of the immigrant population. That seems to be one of the big motivations for Fernandez's break with the party. All voters vote is seen as perhaps creating more centrist candidates, with Fernandez and other analysts saying that the current system encourages candidates to run to the extremes in their party, producing Democratic nominees that are too far left and Republican nominees that are too far right. You know, the all voters vote is seen as the Goldilocks solution. You know, this is just right. Or is it? You know, party lawyers certainly don't think so.
And John, the argument is that if you open up the primary election to all these independents, millions of no party affiliated voters, if one candidate goes too far to the extreme, these voters tend to be more moderate and they'll pick the other candidate. And so this will keep people from pushing to the extremes.
That's it. Yeah. Yeah. That they would have to moderate some of these stances, that the way we currently have this system, the extreme stances is the best way to win a primary. But, you know, the lawyers for the two parties want the justices to bar the measure from the ballot, saying that it's misleading to voters. Here's the Republican Party's attorney. His name's Benjamin Gibson, and some of what he says is wrong.
The amendment does, without informing the voter in the summary, is it equates a party nomination with a party endorsement. Those two things are not the same.
And then the Florida Democratic Party lawyer, Robert McNeely, he also said that voters won't necessarily know that with their vote on this ballot amendment, that they're changing a system that apparently has worked fine for Florida since 1913.
If they're changing a 106-year-old process for these races, doing it by implication is misleading.
But, you know, for all the talk about how voters won't really know the impact of the change before them, the justices hearing these arguments, they didn't really seem convinced. Here's Justice Alan Lawson basing, you know, as he's summarizing it, he's cutting close to the chase here when it comes to, you know, whether this is that confusing to the average voter. Here's Lawson.
One of the things I'm struggling with is if you have a basic understanding of how we do things in Florida, and if you actually vote, you do, and you read this summary and give it a few seconds of thought, you're going to realize the implications.
So he doesn't seem to think it's that bad. Now, the parties would still be able to have a nominee appear on the primary ballot, basically someone designated as the nominee after what may emerge as an earlier party registered voter only ballot. So basically, you may be in a situation, you now have a third election, a nominating vote, then the open primary, then the general election. So maybe that's not all that ideal either. And will it change the quality of candidate that emerges from these so-called jungle primaries? That also is an unknown, but it would certainly change the way we conduct Florida elections and the way candidates campaign. And it's one of the more dramatic ballot questions that voters may get a say on in November, you know, along with that presidential choice.
That's pretty interesting, John. So they could still hold these party nominating contests before this open primary so that you would only have one Democrat and one Republican on the ballot potentially?
Yeah, that somehow only one candidate maybe could be designated as the party nominee. And, and that would be on that big open ballot. So,
right.
But
you could still have other Democrats and Republicans on there, but one of them would be sort of endorsed by the party, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah. Huh. And that's, some of the argument from the Republican lawyer saying that that diminishes sort of the value of the nomination if you're, basically reduced to being the party nominee with like an asterisk next to your name or something like that. So hard to tell, but it really could be something where you wind up then with the top two vote getters. You could have two Republicans advancing to the November election, or two independents. You never know. So right now, though, it's moving forward, and like I said, it has all the votes that it all the signatures from voters that it needs to qualify. So this decision by the Supreme Court is going to be pivotal whether it goes to the November ballot or not.
I think one thing that's worth noting is that elections are government funded. Taxpayers pay for these primary elections, and all of these independent voters are paying through their taxes for primary elections that they can't participate in. So there's one argument for potentially allowing them in, but it is a huge change. I mean, it would really disrupt the nominating process here in Florida, and would make the state a big test case for moving away from these traditional primaries. So it's definitely something to watch. It has all the signatures, and really this Supreme Court review, unless the Supreme Court knocks it off the ballot, voters are going to have to take a look at this and see if this is something that they want. Well, lastly, I caught up with Florida Senate President Bill Galvano this week at a Chamber of Commerce event in Bradenton. Galvano had a few interesting things to say. Red tide has flared back up again here in Southwest Florida, raising fears that the harmful algae bloom could hurt businesses again. Galvano told the crowd that he expects another strong environmental budget this year from the legislature.
Environmentally, we made a tremendous investment last year. I don't see any reason why we're going to peel back that investment this year. $665 million going to various projects, including projects to address the quality of our water. We've created and have the Red Tide Initiative, this Front for Remote Marine Laboratory at $18 million, continuing to work on the quality of the water in Lake Okeechobee. It's important to me, was a $50 million investment in storage wells north of the lake, because that's what's captured the runoff.
So Gavano said he doesn't see peeling back the amount that they continue to invest in environmental initiatives. He also pledged to keep advancing his plan to build three new toll roads in rural parts of Florida, which, speaking about the environment, that's something that environmentalists have really opposed. This year, Galvano said he wants to work on getting funding to ensure broadband, internet, and sewer lines are included in the toll road corridors. But Meanwhile, environmentalists are still hoping to kill the toll road projects altogether. They're meeting actually in the Capitol today. After we record this podcast, there's going to be an announcement of a new group called the Roads to Ruin, Stop the Roads to Ruin Coalition. There are groups like the Sierra Club and others are trying to get together to kill these roads. Here's Galvano's response to that.
I would say drive I-75 from exit 220 past UTC and then give me your opinion at that point. Or drive through Wildwood or look at some of the videos of the Hurricane Irma evacuation and post-Irma reacclimation, and then look at the population growth that's occurring on a daily basis. And to really understand the makeup of the task force and what they've been tasked with doing, which I think is missed a lot, that it was not, nobody drew a road. Right. We said we have opportunities in these corridors to create that connectivity, create the flow, and create economic opportunity for a lot of these small communities that are just sitting there while we have this perimeter of prosperity that keeps getting more and more congested and creating problems like the red tide we were talking about.
So there's Galvano saying that all this growth along the coast is actually creating environmental problems, and that if you steer growth to some of these rural areas, it could alleviate that. But bottom line is Galvano is not backing away from this at all. John, it's hard to see how these groups stop the road projects at this point.
Yeah, it looks like it's advancing. There's supposed to be design features released in the month of January for these roads. And the timing of that is kind of curious in that the legislature is coming back into session in January as well. And I think perhaps once you start seeing the exact footprint of where these three big toll roads go, there's always the possibility that you're going to get some kind of pushback that makes its way into the legislature. So there could be some turbulence coming ahead once people start seeing, the communities that are going to be directly affected where the asphalt is going to be laid. So we'll just have to see how that works. But there's public opposition to this from a lot of environmental and planning kind of organizations. But so far, there doesn't seem to be anything to road crews from getting out there fairly soon.
One interesting point that Galvano continues to make is in this area, we have Interstate 75 coming through. He mentioned UTC, which is the University Town Center Mall, which is a big mall at the border between Sarasota and Manatee County that's right off of Interstate 75. And there's a lot of traffic issues around that area. And he's really arguing that these roads will alleviate traffic on some of the existing Florida interstates. But John, I remember from your reporting that, the Interstate 75 task force was not recommending new roads to alleviate traffic, right?
Yeah. They stayed away from that recommendation completely. They were talking more about improvements to 75. And so this whole movement seemed to come into being after that task force rejected the road plan, which further fuels the speculation that this is really a transportation builder's dream here that is the motivation for it, as opposed to anything that the public is demanding.
Right. And another thing that Galvano alluded to in those comments is concerns about these roads benefiting certain landowners. He said, we didn't pick any routes, we're just talking about corridors. But there's a view that maybe this was intended to maybe not just benefit road builders, but benefit certain people who own property where the roads would go. Galvano has admitted, though, that this is also about economic development, that these rural areas, he says, have been passed over and not participated in the prosperity that a lot of other parts of Florida have seen. So he's not shying away from the idea that this is partly an economic development project as well.
In this upcoming session, I think you're going to see more enhancements to broadband access. That seems to be one of the things that he is also linking this these road projects to, that rural Florida does not have that much broadband capability, and that somehow these roads are going to be linked to that. And I think there's going to be some initiatives that you're going to see the Senate advancing that would kind of underscore that, to try to do some kind of measures, that legislation that maybe suggests that there will be efforts by the state to improve broadband access in rural Florida.
Yeah, he's always pitched this as like infrastructure corridors. It's not just a roadway. It's internet access. It's bringing sewer lines to these communities. He's tried to frame this as a much broader effort to bring, some of the modern amenities to parts of the state that might not be fully up to speed with where the rest of Florida is on some of these things. So, definitely, it sounds like he's looking to get some funding for some of those other aspects going forward. You know, lawmakers approved this bill during the 2019 legislative session, and there's money set aside for the road building, but it sounds like he wants to set aside money for other aspects of these infrastructure efforts. Well, let's talk about our numbers here, John. You had $200 million. You want to tell us what that's all about?
Yeah, $200 million is the low end of what the Trump campaign plans to spend to win Florida next year. That's according to a recent report by Bloomberg News. Bloomberg News, of course, the organization whose founder, Michael Bloomberg, himself is running for the Democratic nomination to take on Trump. That's an awkward spot for any news organization to find itself, but it's not affecting its reporting on Trump. The $200 million plus figure was aired in a story that was published around Thanksgiving, when the president, who recently changed his official residence to Florida, was spending the holiday at his Palm Beach Mar-a-Lago estate. Trump, you remember, Zach, because you were there. He kicked off his re-election campaign in June in Orlando, and just before Thanksgiving, he had another rally in Broward County. Now, he won Florida, you got to remember, by a narrow 1.2 percentage points in 2016, and the state is chock full of expensive media markets, so that adds to the cost of campaigning here. A New York Times poll in the month of October showed him still trailing Democrat Joe Biden in this state by 2 points in a matchup. But if Trump can't carry Florida, he's going to have to carry every other red and swing state that he carried in 2016 to win the White House in an even more lucky poker hand, it would seem. So that puts tremendous pressure on Governor Ron DeSantis to deliver the state for Trump. And that's also why $200 million plus will be spent. Trump is the celebrity guest at the Florida Republican Party Statesman's Dinner on Saturday. And while it's a fundraiser for the party primarily, he knows that this kind of a two-way street exists, where you'll probably hear Trump at this event ask donors at the dinner something similar to what he asked the Ukrainian president last summer. I'd like you to do us a favor, though. So keep those checks coming toward the Trump campaign.
I think people are going to have to brace themselves here. This is going to be a heck of a campaign in Florida. $200 million is an enormous amount of spending for one state, although Florida is a very big state with many media markets, and it's an expensive state to campaign in. But there's no doubt that Trump realizes that a lot of his path to the White House depends on winning Florida. So I think we're going to see the president a lot here. We're going to see him a lot on TV, and it's going to be a dogfight for sure. Well, my number is 99.3. That's the consumer confidence score in Florida for November. And this is also a Trump-related number. The University of Florida's Bureau of Economic and Business Research released the November score yesterday and noted that it's a very strong score, meaning consumers are very confident in the economy right now in Florida. Just for a reference point, the consumer confidence index dropped to 58 during the Great Recession, but in April of this year, it hit a 17-year high and has remained strong throughout the year. So why is this important? Well, it's good news for Trump that we're closing 2019 with people in the nation's largest swing state optimistic about the economy. Consumer spending accounts for about 70% of the economy, and it's often driven by expectations. People don't spend as much money if they don't think their job is secure, but they do spend money if they think the economy is humming along, and that confidence helps keep the economy rolling. And Trump needs to win Florida, as we said, to win the White House, so it helps him if people are optimistic about the economy under his watch. Well, that wraps up another episode of Inside Florida Politics. I want to thank our audio production team of Thomas Cordy and Joseph Rosano. Thanks to all of you for listening. We're out of here.